Welcome to Career Tools. Today's topic, dealing with a personal problem. Part 2 of 2. Here we go. Our first recommendation was to do the work first. Now it's time to address the issue or the problem.
Yeah. A person who has never experienced some sort of personal crisis is obviously pretty rare. And those that got through a crisis without anybody ever noticing are really, really, really rare. Even in the event that your crisis hasn't caused you to take time off, from work yet, your team, your boss, your customers have probably noticed. A divorce, for example, is a good example of a traumatic experience, but most people continue to work through it. However, the fact is, in our experience, many people experienced a productivity dip while their attention is elsewhere as they go through it. There are really two choices. You can address the issue or you can avoid it. Let's consider not addressing it for a moment. You can continue coming to work. You can be distracted. You can produce okay results. You can struggle through. And sorry, folks, you're not the one person whose performance didn't suffer at all when you're going through such an enormous crisis. You may think so, but that's only because your brain is muddled and because you're spending so much time thinking about other things. You don't come up with as many new ideas. You don't come up with as many ways of being effective. And you're simply more inefficient at work. And other people notice. At the end of the month, your manager may very well come to you and have a conversation with you about your lack of results. And it may very well make you feel bad and start some sort of downward spiral, which is not a good place to be in today's world. On the other hand, we recommend you have a professional conversation, a candid discussion, which allows your boss to understand why you're only performing at an average standard or not at your usually superstar standard, right? And then that conversation at the end of the month is about better, whether or not we're doing better and how we think the next month will go.
So are you suggesting that we go to our boss and ask our boss just to let our standards completely go to the floor as a result of this crisis we're going through? I can just think that many bosses might have a problem with that. Just saying.
Let me say first that you don't need to share details that are private, okay? There are all kinds of ways. And if you really need help with a particular situation, feel free to come to the forums or send us a private message on the forums, and we'll do our best to address it. But no, look, we're not suggesting that people get a pass. We certainly didn't tell managers to lower their standard to the floor when their directs were having a personal crisis. If we lower the standard, which is to be achieved, down to almost nothing, most directs who are reasonably intelligent and professional folks know that, and they feel worse about themselves and their ability to deliver that, gosh, they've got to lower the standards to near nothing for me. Instead, we recommend managers, we tell them, start with a little, you know, say to your folks, I want a little less than your best, and work from there. Having a couple of months where you can deliver at a little less than your best, while the worst parts of your divorce or some personal other trauma or issue or health issue will help you recover more quickly, at least at work. But you can only get that kind of grace if you're willing to talk to your manager about the problem you're having and the impact it's having on your work. And if you expect that grace, and perhaps you get it or you think you're getting it by not talking to your boss, you may in fact be getting the grace that your boss says, I don't know why she's not talking to me, but I don't consider this terribly helpful and it bugs me. And you get the grace, but in the end, what happens is the relationship is damaged, and that's not effective either.
Yeah, and you know, talking about being willing to share the problem with your boss if you want some of that leniency or grace, now's a good time to think about and consider asking for support from other organizations as well.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of people aren't willing to do. There's a sense of individuality that comes into the form of I can do this myself. When in fact, there are people around you who want to help. Now, look, there are two kinds of support. There's organizational support and there's non-organizational. Many organizations have employee assistance programs of some sort. There's a range of support from listening services, financial counseling, legal assistance. Look, if it's there, use it.
What if I don't think I need it, though?
Look, and by the way, if you're a high D, take it from me, use it. It works. It's good. Look, don't think. It's amazing. Everybody sits before the crisis and says, I won't need that. I won't need that. I won't use that. And then when they get in the crisis, they remember themselves saying that, not realizing how difficult the situation would be. And they think it's better not to ask. And the number of times people around us have, you know, well, I went through this tough time. Geez, why didn't you ask for help? The reason a lot of people don't get help in the world is because they have too much pride to ask, which that's nobody's fault. If you say to yourself, there are avenues available to me, but I'm not going to ask because I'm afraid what people might think, that's you can't blame the other people for that. That's you deciding not to ask.
Let me ask you this way. I mean, why do companies pay for this service? This stuff isn't free, right? I mean, that employee assistance and all that, those create costs for the company. So there must be a reason.
Oh, they're just throwing money away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look. The only reason they have those services is because they believe the amount of money they spend on the service creates more value than not spending the money, right? The only reason they have employee assistance and legal help and financial help and counseling help and emotional and spiritual help and so on for those people who need it is because they believe the investment in the people pays a bigger dividend than the cost.
Yeah, it works. It actually produces results for both the organization and the individual. Yeah.
Yeah. The companies pay for those services in order to get its employees back to full productivity more quickly than you would if you did not have such a service. If your view is that the organization that you work for is a soulless entity which doesn't care, then okay, take what it's giving to you, right? It's free. Take it, right? And it doesn't care because it doesn't have a soul. If your organization is the caring and sharing type, it's offering you a gift. It's rude not to take it. And by the way, if you think the former, two thoughts for you. We bet you're wrong. But even if not, what the heck are you doing? Leave the company or seek some counseling somewhere else that you pay for to find out why you think your organization is soulless and uncaring when in fact they have those kinds of services.
Yeah. And look at folks, if you do this and there seems to be some organizational bureaucracy getting in between you and the benefits that you're entitled to, go talk to your manager or HR. I mean, they're there to help you with those kind of things. And if they find out that there's a service that's due you and you're not getting it, they'll be concerned. They'll want to help.
Yeah. Look, if the crisis is acute, you may have trouble understanding what you're supposed to do and in what order. Okay. Take it one step at a time. Ask other people to help you. I'm going to say it again, ask other people to help you. If you've ever had a kid with cancer, you've ever been divorced, you've ever been diagnosed with cancer yourself, geez, I mean, if somebody around me went through those things and they didn't say like, geez, you know, I've been there, I can't imagine you going through that yourself. It's funny, sometimes at our conferences, when we're teaching coaching, we use an example of teaching people or coaching directs on how to become better presenters. And I said to a group once, a small group that was working on something, I said, you're brainstorming possible ideas for ways you could help this direct get better at presenting. I wonder if there's anybody in this room who's ever coached anybody or been even paid to coach people on presentation skills or written speeches or coach people on speech making and so on. And they look around and they say to a couple people, have you done that? Have you done that? I said, no, I wonder who that could be. And they're so focused on solving that problem in front of them, they don't take a step up. And the whole point is, it's me, and they could ask me anytime they wanted to. And we just don't think of people that way. In fact, frankly, who's going to be the first person to step up and say, I think it's wrong or bad or professionally dangerous to send an email out to 12 or 15 of your friends to say, does anybody know anything about X? Because I could sure use some help. And I mean, I can't imagine somebody go, oh no, you shouldn't do that. You got to do it yourself. Or no, you'd only want to ask a couple of your close friends because gosh forbid that somebody ask and then somebody say, well, no, I'm sorry, I can't help you. I mean, what's the danger in asking? So please ask. Look, you know, we're talking about organizational resources, but I'm really getting to the whole point of being willing to ask your coworkers as well. But there are non-organizational resources too, like the Red Cross or a shelter or a food pantry. One of Wendy's previous jobs was recruiting into a governing body, which worked with organizations that help people who were needy. When she met people from the charities, she was shocked that one of their major issues is not being able to reach people that need them. That's what bugs them so, that they had resources that they could have made available to people if they could have found them.
Yeah, and they're more worried about that than they are about fundraising. Which,
exactly. Yeah.
which might surprise people, but that's the kind of people who are in those organizations. They want to help.
Right. So don't think you don't need it or you don't deserve it. If you can use it, use whatever you're entitled to. At the end of your life, people aren't going to say he did it all by himself and he eschewed any offers of help. You might end up getting credit for doing a lot of it yourself, but everybody who thinks that successful people did it all themselves, the successful people will tell you again and again and again, I was helped by thousands of people along the way. You know, what did Newton say? I have only seen so far because I've stood on the shoulders of giants. I know when Kate got sick, you know, I remember what all my brothers said to me when I called and said, hey, look, Kate's got cancer. It's going to be a problem. They stepped right up and they were as professional about it as they could possibly be and caring and so on. I'll never forget them for it. So look, part of this issue is that the people around us, including our bosses, can find it difficult to know exactly what to say when we're in crisis with something. They might be afraid to mention the fact that we don't look like we've slept for several days. They don't want to upset us. They don't want us to feel like they're interfering. And frankly, I can tell you folks, as a manager who's dealt with this, there have been times when I've hesitated. And every time I've hesitated, I've regretted it. And every time I pushed and said, are you okay? Do you want to talk about what's going on? If you don't want to talk about it, that's fine, but I need you to hear me say it. I need you to say to that, say you don't want to talk about it. And the number of times I've been shocked that somebody just spilled their beans, spilled their guts about some situation, and I think, geez, I'm so glad I asked. And I've been wrong sometimes, but I've never been wrong by asking. So, you know, you may be afraid to talk about your problem. You don't want to break down in front of the people, and you don't want lots of questions. People around you won't know that unless you tell them that. It's okay for the support you ask for to change from day to day. You might come in one morning, having spent the night at the hospital, and be incapable of talking without letting loose your fears and crying or being scared to death. And you can just say that. You can say, today's not a good day for me. I don't think I'm up for talking. I'm going to sit here and get some work done by myself. Would you mind answering my phone? Or would you mind if I let my phone ring if I can't turn the ringer off? On a better day, you might say things are going better today. Hey, let's spend an hour tackling the McGiddy case, right? You help other people help you by telling them what you need. They're going to be nervous too, perhaps, or uncertain, and you're the one with more information, and it's your obligation to do it right.
Yeah. You know, in a crisis, we question the basics, right? Our perceptions are sometimes completely distorted. We might think we're sounding okay, and then we have a customer say, you don't seem like yourself, and you find tears welling up. You know, ask for guidance.
Yeah. This isn't baseball, so it's not like there's no crying, right? It happens. You're mistaken if you think leaders and other professionals don't cry. They do. We do. It happens. As we've already said, others really could find it difficult to know what to say or what to do around us when we're in crisis. They might have noticed we don't sound okay, but they've been afraid to say something to us. Be clear with them that they can tell you. Ask them, right? Say to them, I know I'm struggling here, but I'm going to try my best. If you notice something I should know about my work, or you think I'm doing better than I am, or you're worried about me in some way, please, will you come tell me? It's simply being willing to rely on professional coworkers to speak candidly and caring to you, in a caring way to you. It works.
Yeah. You know, our last point's an important one, because I think for many of us, and I'm guilty of this, when I have a personal crisis or I'm dealing with an issue, my tendency is to want to keep it to myself. I don't want to share with others. I don't want to burden others. And so I go internal and I communicate much less. And in fact, what I should be doing is communicating more. We see that problem all the time. And it makes you feel a little bit better. And that's not only me, but there's an issue. You know, many problems between two adults come from lack of communication, right? I thought you meant X, or you didn't say that. So I thought this, you know, those questions, you know, I thought you meant, or you didn't say, so I thought, they've got to be some of the saddest words in the English language.
Yeah. Yeah. This reminds me of Horstman's first and second law, which are, it's all about people and more communication is better, right? Yeah, that Wendy reminds us, there's a British wartime poster which said, keep calm and carry on. Or as Churchill said, carry on and dread not, right? don't fall into the trap of not communicating, of being fearful, of being afraid that someone else is not going to like what you say, or you're going to leave something unsaid, or you're going to miscommunicate in a way that affects outcome or results. At a minimum, communicate with your boss at every time period you say you will. If you say, I'm in an ambulance going to the hospital, I won't be in tomorrow, make sure you communicate before the end of that tomorrow, right? It's not fair to your boss, who is worried about you and wondering about workload, to not call for 3 days after you've left that first message. And it's worse than unfair. It's unprofessional. It's wrong, right? His job is to keep things going in the office, ensure that the team continues to get results. If he thinks you'll be gone for a day and you're gone for three, he can't do that very well. In a sense, you're jeopardizing other people's jobs because you're simply not communicating. And it only takes 1 minute to leave a message. You know, look, we're not trying to make you feel bad because you're out. On the other hand, we are going to make you feel bad if you're out and you choose not to communicate when in fact you could have. We want you to know how important communicating is. Ask yourself, what would you want? We recommend the platinum rule often, but the golden rule is, what would you want if the roles were reversed? And if you were the boss, you'd want to know more. Even if it may be weeks, you'd want to know that. If you're going to be off, and look, if you're going to be off for months, communicate with your team and your boss on a regular basis. A quick update is really easy with email, even if somebody has to type it for you. You know, there are people who go through, I know a guy who was a ear, nose, and throat surgeon, and he said like 30% of his patients spent a month or more after surgery not being able to talk. We all just sort of take that whole not being able to talk thing for granted. We take the ability to talk for granted. But not being able to talk for a couple of months is incredible. And yet people say, oh, I just used a screen, a chalkboard or whatever, and or Etch-a-Sketch-like thing or a whiteboard, and it was fine. We made it through. I talked less and I thought more, and things were good. So if that can happen, then you can do it if you can get it for a phone or email, even having somebody else type.
We might actually even allow you to communicate via Twitter if that's the only thing you could do. Probably the only time we'd ever suggest that.
Yeah, exactly. Look, your team will continue with their everyday lives, and their worries will be normal ones. And they'll be worried about you, and yet they may still forget about you. They may forget to communicate with you, let's put it that way. That doesn't mean they don't care. It just means they're busy. The same way you're busy, and you don't stay in touch with your friends sometimes. So you be the one who reaches out. We promise you, you can be far more candid than you think you can be in most cases. Tell your boss, I'm going through a tough time, but I don't want you to let up on me. I want you to continue to talk to me about my work. It's important to me to not let you down. Now, those things sound so corny, and bosses love it. And it's what you mean, it's what you think, it's what you feel. Let's be candid, let's be professional. And those are professional words said that way. So I think we had 5 points, right? Do the work first, address the issue, ask for support, ask for guidance, and please, please, please communicate. Look, work feels like a burden or just another thing to worry about when you're in a personal crisis. But frankly, it can also provide continuity and stability and an opportunity for you to feel like you're making a difference when things are difficult in some other part of your life. It doesn't have to be a first priority. Work doesn't have to be a first priority. You do need to handle it immediately, but dealing with it appropriately, planning for it ahead when you have time, and then concentrating your energy where you should be, and communicating effectively in terms of asking and over-communicating when you have the opportunity. Those are the things that will get you through a tough time. And if you're really in a tough time, send us an email, and if we can help, we will.
Awesome. All right, my friend. As always, thanks. We'll see you. Thanks, everyone. That's it. Hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you all again next week. So long.